You're listening to Spark on CBC Radio 1. Now, we don't talk that much about science on the show. That's for our pals at Quirks and Quarks. But science and scientists have a culture of their own, and the culture is influenced by the tools they use. Scientists are judged by the number of original discoveries they've made, kind of like journalists who are more valued when they break original stories. But like journalists, this can make scientists secretive creatures, keeping their discoveries under wraps until they can publish them. But is this the best way to do science? Jenny Carpenter is both a journalist and a scientist, so who better to ask? Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Noah. So how's your handwriting?
My handwriting?
Yeah, your handwriting. Is it legible? Say to one of your colleagues. I mean, if you walked out of work this evening and got hit by a bus.
If I got hit by a bus?
Horrid, but say you did.
Okay, hypothetically speaking, if I was hit by a bus...
Yep. If you popped your clogs...
Pop my clogs?
Yeah, I think it's a Britishism. if you popped your clogs, could one of your colleagues come in the next day, sit at your desk, look at your notes and carry on where you left off without missing a beat?
Probably not. I have actually pretty terrible handwriting.
Well, Nora, I'm sorry to say, you wouldn't make a very good scientist.
That's not very nice. Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this, Jenny.
Let me explain.
This is your desk. Toilets down on the left. Canteen two floors up.
The first day of my PhD, my supervisor shows me in.
Mm-hmm. Here is your notebook. This is where you write everything down. Everything.
And I can remember thinking, all right, I get it. But you see, the point that my supervisor was trying to drive home is that scientists must be good bookkeepers. Because science can't stand still if someone has, well, pegged it. Experiments have to carry on. The problem is, no scientists I know write legibly.
Okay, so is there a solution to this?
Well, yes. It's called open notebook science.
Open notebook science, okay. Uh-huh.
This is how it works. Instead of logging my notes from my experiments on paper, I log into my online notebook and I log them there. It's a little like Twitter for scientists. Hmm. So I log what I did each day, but very precisely. And because the machine running my samples in the lab is linked to my online notebook, my results get uploaded automatically.
Oh.
And because these notebooks are open to everyone, it encourages me to take notes in a way that people can interpret them. And I don't have to worry about my handwriting.
So wait a minute, these notebooks are open to everybody? Like, I could read them if I wanted to?
Yes, that's the beauty of this. Not only can scientists see what other scientists are doing, curious members of the public can too. I spoke to Michael Nielsen about this. He's actually writing a book. Well, I'll let him explain.
My name is Michael Nielsen. I'm writing a book about the future of science, which is about the way the internet is changing the way scientists work.
Michael told me that open notebook science is actually part of a larger trend towards something called open science. The idea is to make science more collaborative, more transparent, and available to everyone. For example, science is starting to use crowdsourcing to collect data.
Oh, I love this idea about breaking down the boundaries between scientists and non-scientists, so the public is getting involved in doing the science.
Yes. Michael told me about this project called Galaxy Zoo, where the public is looking at hundreds of thousands of pictures taken from outer space to classify galaxies, hoping to find new ones.
Yeah, we've seen this kind of thing before, where you distribute a huge task to lots and lots of people. And usually what it means is that humans are doing work that it's actually easy for us to do, but hard for computers to do, like looking at something and knowing what it is.
Exactly. In fact, just last year, a Dutch school teacher called Hanny van Arkel, she was involved in this Galaxy Zoo project, and she discovered a new cosmic object.
Oh.
And there's other projects. There's one where people monitor the diseases in birds by recording the number of sick birds they see in their garden. And there's the Open Dinosaur Project. I like this one. It's where the public are classifying dinosaur bones for paleontologists.
So that must be the phalanges. And for this pliosaur, it measures in at 235 millimeters long.
But here's the thing. Open science isn't just about scientists collecting data through crowdsourcing. It's more than that. It has the potential to change the way that science is done. Here's Michael Nielsen again.
I think these new tools, new online tools, are changing the way in which people make discoveries. They're changing the way knowledge is constructed. And so we're at this interesting point where we can expect very rapid changes over just a period of a few years or a couple of decades.
That's really cool. So how would this actually work? How are scientists using online tools to make discoveries?
So this is where it gets really exciting. scientists are beginning to use online tools like Twitter, blogs and wikis to develop their thinking.
Mm.
And the thing about the web is that it's editable, it's commentable, and it's ultimately faster to post to a blog than to publish in a traditional science journal.
Sure.
So this means that science can move faster. But of course, there's great reluctance among some scientists to make science this open. The scientific community is really dragging its heels because scientists are judged on the originality of their ideas, right? And so they're worried that if they put their ideas online, someone might steal them.
And so are they right to be worried?
Yes and no. In some ways, it doesn't really matter because the system is beginning to change anyway. Despite some scientists being resistant, other scientists are reaping the benefits of moving online. And this paves the way for other scientists. And we should also remember a couple of hundred years ago when someone suggested to scientists to publish their results in scientific journals, they laughed.
Hmm.
You know, why should they when they could make money from books? This is similar to the growth of online news and the demise of newspapers, I guess. Newspapers are equivalent to traditional scientific journals in the way that they need to change the way that they do business to keep pace with the online world. Otherwise, they'll both miss what's new.
So you're almost saying that the benefits of moving science online are so great that it's kind of inevitable?
Yeah, I believe so. I guess what attracts me to the idea of open science is that not only could online science discover more quicker, but it could tackle bigger problems. Problems that are beyond the capability of any one individual. So as science goes online, it could potentially bring together many people, each a specialist in their own field and each with their own experiences and their own vision, but all tackling the same problem.
If you have very complex problems like finding new subatomic particles or like solving climate change, it helps to have thousands of scientists involved. And it's you know, the only way that's possible is if you have very powerful coordinating media. And that's exactly what we're in the process of developing at the moment.
And those of us with bad handwriting don't need to worry anymore. Thanks a lot for telling us about it, Jenny.
My pleasure, Laura. And be careful crossing the street on the way home.
So you know how Jenny mentioned that anyone can look at the notebooks that some scientists are keeping online? Well, up at the Spark blog, we've posted links to a couple of notebooks that you can check out for yourself.